Welcome to What is Going Om for new thought from the edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. There's no denying that we're living in an era of unprecedented change with a number of major crises converging, from climate change to economic and political instability to the erosion of entire communities and displacement of over 6 million people due to violence and religious wars. The world today's children are being raised in bears little resemblance to the world that we and our parents grew up in, and it seems that every day the media regales us with more shocking evidence of this. Is it any wonder that many are feeling as if they no longer have any control over their future? But is that true? What if the turmoil and upheaval that many are perceiving as global annihilation is, instead, evidence of a global awakening? How might this perspective change the way that you move through this transition? Chris Attwood is an expert in the field of human consciousness, a leading trainer and author in the transformational industry, a founding member of the Transformational Leadership Council. He's created many enlightened alliances and played a key role in arranging 70% of the interviews for the movie The Secret. Having been CEO or senior executive of 15 companies, including one of the leading consulting and training companies in the world, he's deeply grounded in the world of business, where his training programs focus on transforming the way large companies, corporations and banks interact with their customers by bringing enlightenment and conscious principles to their executives and sales forces. Chris Attwood joins me today to share how we can adapt to the changes this transition is bringing and why finding our passion is the key to creating a life and a world worth looking forward to. Chris Attwood, welcome.
Thank you so much, Sandy. It's great to be here.
Chris, your commitment to the experience and the expression of the unlimited potential of the heart and mind is a common thread across all of your transformational courses, programs, and workshops. Where did this desire and commitment arise in you, and when?
So thank you for asking that question, Sandy. It takes me back to when I entered college, which is going to date me, I'm afraid. Because when I started college, the Vietnam War was in full swing, and there were campuses all across the country where students were protesting and so forth. And in the first year of my college career, there were three riots in Isla Vista at UC Santa Barbara, the student community next to the university. And in the first one, the Bank of America was burned to the ground, this bank in the middle of town. And I remember standing on the street corner with about 3,000 other young people around me, watching as policemen who looked more like soldiers in helmets and plastic shields and full riot gear came marching across the field and arrayed themselves in front of the crowd. And looking at their faces, I saw fear, I saw anger, I saw sort of perplexity sometimes, not knowing kind of what they were doing there. And from the kids, most of what I heard was shouts and anger and a lot of words that we wouldn't want to repeat on this show. And from time to time, the police came and they charged the crowd and they took their batons and they were beating the students up. And then they would fall back, and then the crowd would get angrier, and they'd throw bottles and rocks and things at the police, and then the police would charge again. That happened again and again until finally, with a collective roar, the entire crowd seemed to rush at the police, and the poor policeman turned around and went running off to the bus that they had come in on. And I remember standing there. I was 17 years old at the time, and I wasn't particularly politically astute, just to be honest, but I was just taking it all in, and I remember thinking, you know, I really don't want to live in a world like this, a world where people are angry and hating each other and being violent against each other. And so I got really involved with the community development effort in Isla Vista, in this community, student community. And I became the planning director for the Isla Vista Community Council, which was kind of a group that spontaneously arose out of the riots to give a voice to the students in Isla Vista. And we had a budget from the university and from the state and did a lot of great things. And one of the things during that time that I did is to start a food co-op, the Isla Vista Food Co-op. And I remember when I started that, I had this really great vision that if we could just change the institutions in the world, the way they function and how people interacted within those institutions, and created new structures that could be a model for other institutions, then we could have an impact on the whole society. And so it was with that thought that we launched the co-op, and a good proportion of the community joined it, and everyone came and spent an hour a month volunteering in the co-op and doing some sort of work so that they could see what it took to get the food onto their table. And it was going really well until about 3 months in, and I was doing the books one evening, and I discovered that our volunteer cashiers were stealing money from the cash register. And my young, idealistic, visionary mind kind of went, collapsed on itself. And I had learned to meditate a few years before. I had learned transcendental meditation, and I meditated regularly, primarily so that I would have more energy, so that I could deal with the stress of doing so much to save the world, and that I could be more effective in what I was doing. And I found meditation to be very valuable, but it was at that moment that I realized that nothing's going to change on the outside until the inside changes in people. And so that really started a completely new direction in my life, and I became a teacher of transcendental meditation, and later I spent 10 years in long meditation, 8 to 10 hours a day, studying the Vedic literature of India, and in one way or another, this has been what my life has been about since then, is to how do we open up to the perfection that lies within and bring that out into the world that does seem so imperfect on the outside.
Well, along with your business partner and ex-wife, Janet Bray Atwood, you co-authored the New York Times bestsellers, The Passion Test and Your Hidden Riches. You've built a global brand with almost 2,000 Passion Test facilitators in more than 60 countries. Tell us a little bit about the Passion Test, how you developed it, and what it's really all about.
Sure. Really, Janet developed the Passion Test. And there's a whole story in the Passion Test book that I won't repeat here that went with that. But the essence of it is that she was in a job that she hated, and she met a motivational, a transformational speaker who said, if you just got clear on the five things. She didn't say this, actually. There was a study she was talking about that found that the thing that 100 of the most successful people in the United States had in common was that they were all living their passions. They were all doing things that they were passionate about. And so she had the thought, if I could just get clear on what my top five passions, what I care most about, then that would be the start of my successful life. And that was really the beginning of the Passion Test. And then Janet and I, after we had been married for 5 years, we got a divorce. We realized being married wasn't the best relationship for us, but we still loved each other. We still remained friends. And so several years later, we became business partners. And Janet asked me to take the ebook she'd written about the Passion Test and help her rewrite it. And that became the core of the Passion Test book that people still, I'm happy to say, still seem to get great value from even today.
I want to come back to the Passion Test later, because I think that there's so much, that we have to say about Dharma and passion and how that, informs the way that we move through the world, and especially through a world that's in such great transition. Before I do that, I think we're about to go over to our break. So we'll discuss that when we get back, Chris. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with best-selling co-author of The Passion Test and Your Hidden Riches, Chris Atwood, about the importance of staying open in the midst of change and how staying true to our passion can help us make the most of the awakening aspect of this transition. We'll be back after the break.
future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Radio's What Is Going On show. If you've been on a spiritual journey and know yourself to be more than just your body, mind and emotions, yet still struggle to fully love yourself and the life you're living. If you experience childhood challenges that continue to play out as limiting patterns in your daily life. If you long for success in your relationships and career, but keep finding it eludes you. I invite you to join me on the free Journey Back to Love Symposium that I'm co-hosting June 18th to 24th. You'll get valuable insights, tools, practical processes and gifts from 8 internationally renowned teachers and speakers that would not only dramatically shift your perceptions about love, but also help you understand and integrate all those places where you may have secretly believed that you were broken. So if you're ready to transform your beliefs about love, success and freedom, and finally put all your perceived limitations, fears and failures in your relationships and life behind you, visit thejourneybacktolove.com and join me on this free life-transforming journey back to love. I look forward to seeing you there.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Chris Atwood, I know you're passionate about collaboration, connection, cooperation, and I know you bring spiritual principles, consciousness into everything that you do. And I also know that you're really passionate about talking about this major transition and helping people understand the benefits that lie ahead for us if we make some small changes, maybe large changes for some, in our lives. So let's talk about this transition and what's happening in the world and the positive outlook for this.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think many people today realize that there's a major transition going on in the world. And what I liken it to is physical systems, that in physical systems, when a substance goes from one state to another state, there's something called a phase transition. During that phase transition, then there's a lot of turbulence in the molecules that comprise that substance. And just as by way of example, we could imagine that if we lived in a community of ice molecules, for example, and we were an ice molecule, our life would have been very stable, very secure. Everything that we lived through was reliable, dependable. We could count on it because things didn't change much. But then when the heat goes up and things start melting, then it would feel like our whole world was getting turned upside down, and literally, in some, actually, as our ice molecules get transformed, and it would be very uncomfortable because everything that we counted on was suddenly no longer the same. The things were changing so rapidly and seem so out of kilter that it could be very uncomfortable in that state. But then once the new state has been achieved and now we're a water molecule, then suddenly we're able to flow. We're able to go where we were never able to go before. We're able to have experiences that we could never have in our previous state. And I believe the world's in that same kind of process, that we're in a phase transition, moving from a time where decisions and the structure of our society was primarily dictated by male principles, the principles of the intellect, because the masculine, by its nature, those of us who tend to be predominantly masculine and are given the name men can say with authority that that we tend to be more intellectual, you know, for the most part. We tend to be more intellectual. We tend to think things through in some sort of logical, analytical way. We like things to be step by step. We like things to be organized, and so we often, you know, analyze things and pull them apart so that we can see what they're made of and then put them back together in some way that makes sense to us. And the masculine principle of organizing society has guided society for several thousand years now. And I believe that we're moving into a time where that principle is no longer valid, that the only way, in fact, that we're going to be able to survive on the planet is to move into a new, more feminine model, a model which is based upon collaboration, a model which is based upon the qualities of nurturing and care, of compassion and openness, transparency and authenticity, that a time when we have to learn from people who we may in the past have thought were not as developed as we were. And I'm thinking now that of the so-called developed world as opposed to the indigenous peoples of the world. There's a wonderful anthropologist by the name of Dr. Wade Davis, who has given a number of great TED Talks. And in one of them, he talked about his experience of living with some of the indigenous peoples in South America and elsewhere. And he said that we tend to think in the West of these people as being somehow primitive. But when you spend time among them, what you realize is that they're not primitive at all. They've simply applied the immense intelligence and creativity of the human mind to a different set of problems than we have in the so-called developed world. And so this, if I can just say one last thing about this, Sandy, this logical analytical approach has led us to great technology, great breakthroughs, great, you know, greater ease in life, comfort in life than we've ever enjoyed before. But it's had a whole lot of side effects. A whole lot of unanticipated effects. And that's why we need to come to this place where we are opening up to a different way of functioning. And I believe that's one of the reasons why women, who are generally predominantly feminine in their approach to life, really have a very important leadership role to play in this new world that we're entering into.
Of course, you know, what you're talking about is absolutely true, and many people would look at this as, you know, the feminine rising, you know, the goddess energy coming back on the planet if we look at it from those points of view. But this is something that I think indigenous peoples have pretty much always, you know, they've lived in, if you think about the Native American cultures, they lived in balance, and they lived in balance with nature. And we understood, the best things about roles and the differences and what, you know, females are capable of doing, best at doing, and vice versa. And there wasn't much of a problem. And then we learned to push aside all of that and discount all that wisdom. What do you think we could do to begin to develop more respect for the different values and sensitivities and utilize the best values and practices of all of the different cultures for the benefit of the whole? Because we're not doing it.
Yeah, of course not. And I think fundamentally it comes to the recognition, which more and more people these days are having, the recognition that our world and the life that we are a part of is an interconnected whole. It's not independent pieces that are somehow functioning independently of each other, but each part is as if a piece of the puzzle that goes into creating the whole, and that you can't really take any piece of that out without it being less. And this brings me to this point about passion and dharma and purpose that you were raising earlier, Sandy, because I spent the last 15 years of my life, as you know, really diving deep into the nature of passion, the nature of purpose, which ultimately comes down in the ancient writings with this word dharma. Dharma has often been translated as duty, but I think it's a very poor translation. What it means really is the ability to spontaneously act in a way which is of maximum benefit to oneself and to the entire creation all at the same time. And Dharma is not something that you can figure out. It's not something that you can come to through your intellect. It's fundamentally something that has to arise by connecting with the deepest part of your own nature, of who you are. And this is why, from my perspective, understanding your passions, and as Janet and I have defined them a little differently than many people do, your passions are the things you love, that you care most deeply about, that matter most to you. And as we said in the Passion Test book, your passions are God's will for you. It's not an accident that you love the things you love. It's not an accident that you care about the things you care about. Those are the things that will lead you in your individual life along the path to fulfill your unique and special purpose in being alive, a purpose that no one else but you can fulfill. And likewise, when you get off that path, then you start to suffer. You become miserable, as we see in so many people around the world, and including in the most developed nations. In the United States, the latest studies say that maybe, if we're lucky, 30% of the working population is engaged and passionate about the work that they do. 30%. You know, Sandy, think about it. If you had a company where only 30% of the people were doing the job that they were supposed to do, and the rest were just sitting around and doing something else that had nothing to do with the business, that business wouldn't be very successful, would it? And likewise, if you had a machine, if you had a machine and 30% of the parts in the machine were working, but 70% of them were not, the machine probably wouldn't function very well. And so, like that, if we understand, and this is what the ancient writings on our planet say, is that Dharma is not just individual Dharma. It's not just your own unique purpose, but Dharma is also a function of society. And that when Dharma is alive in the world, when Dharma is alive in our social systems, then society works. It works well. People are living their passions. Their lives are filled with joy. They're contributing and serving others in meaningful ways. But in our world, where only 30% may be doing that, 70% are not, if we're lucky, then is it any surprise that we live in a world that seems to be in such disastrous shape? 70% of the people on the planet or more are not doing the jobs they were born to do from that perspective. And so it comes to this point of what can we do? What we can do is we can really focus on who am I? What are my passions? What am I excited about? What lights me up? And then how can I combine that with the gifts, the talents that I was given when I was born, the things that I'm good at that other people seem to have a hard time with? And then use those things, my passions and my talents, to serve in some useful and meaningful way. And the more that we do that individually and collectively, then the more we'll find that our society begins to function in the way that it was meant to function.
You know, there's an interesting paradox there, because you're absolutely right. We do need to focus on me, because when we are taking care of us, we have more to give, you know, to everybody else. But you know, somewhere along the line, we turned that into selfishness, and it became more about, you know, making me bigger, better, you know, richer, more, you know, influential, etc. I mean, where do you think we lost our Dharma? How did this fall from grace come about?
Well, and I don't want to blame the men for it, but so that's why I'll say it's the masculine principle of organization that has led to that, because the intellect, which is the masculine primary way that the masculine understands the nature of life, is through the intellect. The intellect's role is to take things apart, to pull things apart. So it's natural that I would, from that masculine perspective, think that I have to make myself bigger, better, stronger, wealthier, more powerful than everybody else, and then that will constitute success. That's a very masculine view of life.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with expert in the field of human consciousness and a leading trainer and best-selling author in the transformational industry, Chris Atwood. We'll be back after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, you know, your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Chris Atwood, you work with a lot of businesses, corporations. Are you seeing evidence of change in those organizations?
Well, I think if you look at companies generally, There are radical changes that are going on across nations and throughout industries. One of the most basic ones is that if you looked at annual reports 20 years ago or 30 years ago, there would be no mention of social responsibility. And yet today, I don't think that there's an annual report of any publicly traded company that doesn't have a whole section dedicated to what that company is contributing to from a social responsibility standpoint. So, you know, in some cases, those companies are giving lip service to it because they know it's necessary. But in many cases, companies are taking real strides toward transforming the way they interact with their communities, how they do business, how they consume energy and resources. There's massive changes from my perspective all across the globe. And of course, the question that you raised at the very beginning of this interview, Sandy, is it all happening fast enough? You know, I shared with you that statement my friend made, that it feels as if we're in a race between global annihilation and global awakening, and it's hard to tell who's winning, right?
Yes. So. But, you know, when you and I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago, you were telling me about some of the wonderful things that are happening that people, by and large, the general public don't get to hear about. I mean, you talked about John Perkins' work, Lynn Twist's work, Pachamama Alliance, you know, Wade Davis and many, many others. Tell us a little bit of the positives, because I think unless someone is deeply immersed in some of those, you know, organizations or interests, they don't know what's going on.
Well, there are some really remarkable things going on. I think one of the most remarkable that we haven't talked about, Sandy, is the work of the economist Jeremy Rifkin, who has been working both in Europe and China for the last couple of decades. And he's just Vice Media has just released a movie that was screened at the Tribeca Film Festival last month, called The Third Industrial Revolution. And it gives a completely new possibility of a new society that is based upon interconnection, the recognition that the world is interconnected. And what's so amazing and fascinating about this is that the European Union has already adopted many of these principles, made it part of their long-term planning. There are areas of Europe that have already invested hundreds of millions of dollars in creating the infrastructure for what Jeremy has laid out in Rotterdam area and in France and in Luxembourg, these areas, they've done that. And also, interestingly enough, China's premier, Xi Jinping, has read Jeremy Rifkin's book, The Third Industrial Revolution, and he has made it a fundamental part of the latest five-year plan that was released for China. And China is investing something like $360 billion between now and 2020 on renewable energy and introducing this new infrastructure that's required to support this third industrial revolution that Jeremy talks about. So I would encourage anyone who's interested in this to get a copy of Jeremy's book. And when the movie comes out, be sure and see it. It really is a radical new way of looking at society. But there are a lot of individual projects. I don't know, I may have mentioned to you, Sandy, there's a young man, 22-year-old man by the name of Boyan Slot in the Netherlands, who started a foundation to eliminate plastics from the ocean. You know, plastics have become an increasing problem in the world's oceans because they don't biodegrade, and he's raised $30 million, and with that hired a team of scientists who have shown that at the rate that we're going, plastics will half fill the ocean within the next 30 or 40 years, and at the same time, they've developed technology to be able to, working with the natural movements of the ocean, to collect the plastics, and they project that they can eliminate 50% of the plastics in the ocean in the next 5 years, and all of them within the next 15 years. So that changes the whole focus now. Then it's a matter of not getting more plastics into the ocean. So that's one project. There's another one called Just Dig It, which I think is very interesting, that a group of scientists and experts have gotten together and are creating what they call hydrologic zones, regenerating deserts around the world, reestablishing rain patterns. And they believe that they have the science that supports their ability, the ability of our society to reverse climate change by regenerating areas that have been become desert. And these are just, you know, a few examples of someone told me recently that it seems that there are maybe over 2 million organizations in the world, not people, but organizations, that are working in one way or another on the various issues that are facing our planet right now. And to me, that's astounding. It's astounding. It's amazing. It's wonderful. It's incredible. And it's very hopeful.
You know, I interviewed somebody who's prominent in the Bioneer movement a few months back, and doing the research for that, I was astonished at how many companies are following, you know, the Bioneer movement and actually changing the way that they do things. And it's inspiring them to look at nature and do the things the way nature does, so that it's far more safe and conscious for the planet, for ourselves. The thing that, you know, concerns me is these things are happening. These people are following their passion and creating enormous transformations. And, you know, and sometimes it starts with just one person. How can other people, you know, really get inspired by this, and how can they come together? Because so many people have such great ideas but don't know what to do with them.
So let me first say that I'm going to repeat something I said earlier in the interview, and that is that for each of us, it's not an accident that you love the things you love. It's not an accident that you care about the things you care about, nor is it an accident that you have certain talents and gifts that allow you to excel in areas that others do not. And I said that each of us has a unique purpose to serve, but I also know that we all share one common purpose, and that purpose is to serve each other. were born for the purpose of being able to serve each other. And this transformation that's happening right now, that we're in the midst of, is a transformation that is grounded on a recognition that every single person and every aspect of nature, every aspect of life and this creation that we are able to observe, every part of it is interconnected. And so it's not possible to quote unquote be by yourself. If you have a passion, if anyone has a passion, has something that they're excited about, an idea that they think is valuable, then the place I've found is most useful to start is to find who are the leaders in that area, who are the people who are already working in that area, who are considered the best, the top, the ones who are breaking new ground, and then find ways that you can support them in some way or other, create a relationship with them. And it may sound counterproductive that I have this great idea that is going to really transform the world, and the first thing I should go do is go out and volunteer and learn from others who are doing other things with other ideas. But what I've seen, Sandy, and over many, many years of building alliances and relationships, is the way that you create connection, the way you create relationship, and the way you make turn ideas into reality is through a simple word called a team. And my children will tell you that what team stands for is that together everyone achieves miracles. Mm-hmm. So the way to bring your idea into being is to find someone who's working in the area that you can learn from, to see if your idea is really as good as it seems, and also by helping and contributing to their idea, to what they're excited about, what they're passionate about, and what they're doing, then you begin to build a relationship of trust. And when you have a relationship of trust, then things become possible that would otherwise be impossible. And so my answer to your question would be to find your own enlightened alliance. And the way I define your ideal partner is that person or organization who has a critical need that you are uniquely qualified to fulfill. And in fulfilling their critical need, you fulfill your own critical need at the same time.
Mm. Now, I know that you are currently focused on creating physical places designed to catalyze positive social transformation and to accelerate the pace of global awakening. Tell us about what you're doing.
So I am creating Bayuls. Bayul is a Tibetan Buddhist term, and Bayul means a place or places where the truth of life is maintained. The Dalai Lama has described Bayuls as places not to escape the world, but to enter it more deeply. And he said that the nature of such places reveals the hidden regions of the mind and spirit. And so my intent and my focus these days is to see what can I do to bring together some of the most influential and most active people in this area of global and social transformation, support them in what they're doing and the work they're doing, taking my own advice, Sandy. And then secondly, to create physical places that bring together both ancient knowledge, ancient wisdom, and modern emergent wisdom of building and living in accord with nature, to create models that reflect what our society and our civilization is moving into.
Now, I know that you're going to create virtual salons with conscious leaders. Are these things that anybody could attend and receive inspiration from?
So thank you for asking that, and I'd love to be able to say yes. The answer in this case is no. These salons are really oriented around particular topics and subjects, and they're built on the 18th century idea of salons, which brought together the thinkers and the philosophers, scientists of that time. So they'll be by invitation only.
You know, a few years ago, Okay, we have to go to break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with an expert in the field of human consciousness and a leading trainer and best-selling author in the transformational industry, Chris Atwood, about how finding our passion and dharma are key to transforming the future for us, our children, and for humanity. We'll be back after the break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hi everyone, this is Shay Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shay Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, Chris Atwood. I was so engaged in what you were saying before that I completely lost track of time. What I wanted to talk about was the whole idea of the World Cafes, because I attended one some years ago in San Francisco, and I think it was put on by Noetic Sciences. And the premise of those was that there are people all over the world who have wonderful ideas, don't know what to do with them, are looking for their tribe, people they can discuss them with, and great conversations taking place in cafes that actually never get to go anywhere. And so somebody created this idea, which I thought was fabulous, you know, to create these cafe, you know, opportunities for people to share what they know, but to have people also collating, you know, what they know, what their ideas are, and organizing something around it. You know, do you know anybody who's doing this?
Well, there are a variety of people who are doing things similar to that. One of the most interesting, I think, is the Summit community. I can't remember if we talked about it or not, but Summit was started 7 or 8 years ago by 4 young men, and they were great connectors. They put on a conference. That's how they started. And they had some great speakers. Bill Clinton spoke, Richard Branson spoke at their first conference. And but they made the expansion of the community by invitation only. And over the years, they continued to have conferences. They invited people who had ideas, and continue to do, by the way. They continue to invite people who have ideas, people who have money, people who have no money, people of all backgrounds and directions. The only requirement is that you had to be invited by a current member, an existing member. And so it's grown over to into some thousands of members by now. And a couple of years ago, I believe, that one of the members approached the founders and said that there was a mountain called Powder Mountain in Utah that was up for sale because the operators hadn't been able to make it work financially. And the Summit community got together. I think they had 40 people or They raised $40 million from 20 different benefactors, 20 different investors, and purchased the mountain, and now in the process of building an entire community just for the purpose that you were describing, Sandy, really to engage people in conversations and discussions about ideas that will change the world. I believe their website is summit.co. If you go and look at that and read about some of the things that they're doing, they have excursions, people going out on adventures together. They have conferences still. They bring together thinkers and leaders, and they have a whole variety of venues for people to be able to share ideas and to bring them to being. In fact, when you look at their website, you see that they talk about a number of business ideas that were birthed at summit conferences and since have grown, been successful, and been sold for millions and millions of dollars. So it's a very rich community that's composed of people that have no money all the way up to people who are billionaires and have lots and lots of money. So it's a very interesting example of what you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been looking at some of your work and the courses that you offer in the corporate arena. And one of the things that you give advice on is how to stay open in the midst of change. And you say that the ability to effectively respond to change is one of the core competencies required of any successful business. And organizations that do not respond effectively to changes in the economy, their market, or internal changes will not survive. The same must be true of individuals. And organizations
absolutely
are those dedicated, yes, to businesses. So what tips could you offer us from what you take into that corporate arena? What could you offer us as individuals that could help us really stay open to change and focus on all of the necessary positives of this transition?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, Sandy, because although I did create a program for businesses and corporations, it's never been my great passion. So I don't work so much specifically with businesses and corporations anymore, although, as you mentioned, I've started and run quite a few businesses over my life. But I think the principle that you described is a principle that applies to all of us. The one constant in our world and in our lives is that things are always changing. So our ability to stay open in the midst of changing circumstances and situations is really the key to our ability to adapt. And for me, there have been three fundamental things that have contributed to my own ability to do that. And these are the things that I would share with those who are listening. The first, and for me, the foundational aspect has been my meditation practice. And I will admit I have a personal bias toward transcendental meditation because there's been such an immense amount of scientific research that supports the effectiveness of the practice. And also because I've seen that regardless of one's religious persuasion, one's beliefs or occupation or approach towards spirituality, that the ability to transcend and to experience that infinite field of pure awareness that exists within each of us and do that on a regular systematic basis a couple times a day, then come out and live your life, that's really the foundation of success in any area. And it makes everything that one does, including one's religious or spiritual practices, be more effective. So that's, for me, number one. Number two, is really the ability to investigate one's own thoughts. And this, I think, is the key to being able to stay open in the midst of change, Sandy, is that we have a tendency as human beings to believe our thinking, and yet most of the time our thoughts really aren't true when we investigate them deeply. And I found the work of Byron Katie to be an incredibly useful, valuable tool. It's very simple, four questions and what Katie calls a turnaround, but that allow one to really look at thoughts or beliefs that one has and say, is that really true? Can I really absolutely know that that's true? And how do I react? How do I feel when I have that thought? Who would I be if I wasn't thinking that thought? And then turning the thought around. So, for example, if I had the thought, well, my wife should be more considerate, then I could turn it around and say I should be more considerate, and then find evidence that that's true. I found this to be an incredibly useful, valuable process. And then the third and last thing we've already talked about tonight or today is identifying your passions. And for me, I personally, and again, I'm totally biased when it comes to this, but I believe the passion test is the simplest and because it's simple, most effective way to get clear right now, not forever, but for right now, about what it is that really matters most to you. When you can be honest with yourself and let go of the shoulds in your life, and then make that list of the things you love and care about in your life, and then use the passion test process to boil it down to the five things that matter most, and then turn that into a vision for your life, as we suggest in the passion test. I think that it then puts you on a trajectory that will ultimately lead you to your purpose. And the other piece of that, that we teach in the passion test, is that once you know your passions, then the key is that whenever you're faced with a choice, a decision, or an opportunity, choose in favor of your passions. So that means consistently make choices based upon your passions, not what someone else thinks you should do or what society thinks you should do, but rather what you're being led or drawn to do. And when people do that consistently, then what they report to me over and over again is that, you know, after a while, my life feels more purposeful. It feels more meaningful. And that's because, from my perspective, the reason is that your passions are those things that are built into you to lead you on to fulfill that purpose, that destiny. So you don't even have to consciously know what your purpose in life is. When you follow your passions, when you make decisions consistently that bring you closer, connect you more deeply with the things you love and care most deeply about, then you will discover that your purpose emerges without you having to figure it out.
I totally agree with you, Chris. And I think all of us, you know, secretly yearn to live a purposeful life, and purposeful outweighs, you know, all the other things that we might do in life for money, for whatever. I mean, people will do the meanest tasks if it's purposeful for them. One of the things that you have recently done is to produce a new book called Your Hidden Riches, and a website. And I think that they're looking at the website, there's a wealth of material there too that can help people understand what they've really got inside of them that they may not be aware of. Could you just speak to that, you know, briefly before we close?
Sure. Well, for me, it all comes back to this concept of Dharma. And as I said at the beginning of this interview, Dharma is not something that you can figure out intellectually. And that's why consistently choosing in favor of your passions, using your natural gifts and talents in the service of others, is what will lead you on to fulfill that Dharma naturally. And it also, as it turns out, is the way that you will be able to contribute maximally to our entire society. And so Your Hidden Riches was really looking at the value of ritual, of having consistent, regular practices that reinforce a conscious life, a life that where you're making conscious decisions. And so I would say for everyone, the way that you can contribute most to our world is by clarifying your passions, falling in love with them, disbelieving your thoughts, and then grounding yourself in that field of calm and peace within, and then act from there.
That's a great way to end the show. Chris Atwood, I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for being with us today. You've been listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. If you want to know more about the Passion Test, Your Hidden Riches, and the Bayou Club, you can find the information at thepassiontest.com, thehiddenriches.com, and Bayou Club, and that is BEYUL club.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for listening. I look forward to having your company at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.